You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. You ever met that guy who's like, oh, you like movies? I like movies. And proceeds to tell you for 3 hours why Goodfellas is like the greatest movie ever made. And like nothing else even comes close to Goodfellas. And God, isn't Goodfellas great? And I wish every movie was like Goodfellas. I would never thought that was the Russo brothers, but here we are.
I'm kind of that guy, except I also really love The Godfather.
Yes, indeed. But this movie, Cherry, which is their first film that they've actually, I believe, directed since the Marvel films. They've been involved in production on a number of different movies. But this is the first one they actually straight up directed. Anthony and Joe Russo is based on a novel of the same name by Nico Walker that is actually a true story, shockingly enough. That was actually the most startling thing to me reading about this after the fact. Finding out, wow, all that actually happened? Shit. It's too bad that his real life story resembles a number of much better films we've already seen. We're talking about Cherry. I'm Chris, one of your hosts. Joining me is Brad.
Hello.
And Davey.
It's hard to make fun of this because it's very similar to real life and, but it's bad.
You son of a bitch, Davey, how dare you make fun of this real life issue?
I'm sorry. It just, the veterans are funny.
You're a monster. Look, let's just start off by saying there's nothing funny about PTSD. There's nothing funny about people fighting drug addiction. And there's nothing funny about this, the fact that this guy had to go through all this stuff. What is funny is that the Russos found exactly, almost on every level, the wrong way to tell this story that should have been dealt with some amount of delicacy and not looked like the most stylish part, some Goodfellas cranked up to like 12. I don't know. And oh yeah, first off, let's not forget, if you're telling a story about a guy who like was in the military, came out with severe PTSD and turned to heroin and various other opiate drugs and robbing banks and is just a hard-bitten, scarred-up-looking criminal, why in the fuck would you cast Tom Holland, who's like America's sweetheart?
Well, it all happened to this man when he was very young. In the novel, he's called, and the movie, Cherry, I guess. I don't remember anyone really calling him that except when he popped his. But, yeah, he's supposed to be a young baby face. He was torn apart by the post 9/11 and all of that. And I think it's a brave choice. I agree. He doesn't look like a hardened criminal in any sense, no matter how thick his mustache gets, no matter how smooth his combing is.
He can't get it, but so thick. It's Tom Holland. It's like yeah. I bet they just glued on some yeah. a few like stray hairs because they couldn't even get peach fuzz to come out.
Right. Yeah, it is a bold choice. I agree with you, Brett, but it was the wrong bold choice, and I feel like if you're going to do a choice like that, you have to be better directors. I think Tom Holland could have pulled this off in a better world.
Maybe. Yeah. I also, you know, my experience with Tom Holland is basically the Spider-Man films, and then Davey and I just reviewed the other day Chaos Walking, where he was largely playing pretty much Peter Parker in that film, the same type of character. Yeah. Not a superhero, mind you, but you can listen to that review where we also talk about Cherry a little bit. So yeah. It comes full circle. You know, I he's good at that type of role. I'm not really sure I ever bought him in this, but let's talk about what the plot is outside of what we've already said here. This is one of these movies that starts off like, oh, this is when things are already bad. This guy, he's already all got like fucking like opiate zits or whatever, and is like robbing a place. And you're like, okay, like, all right, so who is this? I was like, that can't be Tom Holland, because I hadn't even looked at the cast list yet. I was like, that guy kind of looks like Tom Holland, but that can't be him, because they put a bunch of makeup on him and shit. So it goes back with him, like, sweet kid, you know, falls in love with the girl from school, played by Ciara Bravo, who I'm convinced is going to be a huge star. I just saw her recently on a TV show. Good Lord, what was it called? Wayne, where she plays the lead female role in that. And she's amazing on that show. And I was like, I like this girl. She's a little tiny thing, but she's like one of those people's little tiny thing that could explode like nuclear explosion at any moment. You would not want to fuck with her. She's great at that. Anyway, so they're like, this sort of romance between the two of them is taking off. And then, like, there's difficulties because she's not sure what she wants. And she's kind of like, she is a hard-edged person who kind of pushing her away because she's loving him. And eventually he's like, oh, well, you pushed me away. I thought we were over, so I signed up for the military. Fuck. So, Yeah, so he goes to Iraq and has a terrible experience, you know, unlike most people who just had a huge party in Iraq. It was so much fun. Man, I hear all these great party stories from Iraq.
Yeah, Three Kings.
Kidding, obviously. And he comes back, you know, having watched some of his best friends get blown to shreds right in front of him, really, really fucking scarred, or is like apparently a therapist of the actual author of this said it was literally the worst case of PTSD we've ever recorded was this guy who was so fucked up from this. And he can't handle the pain of it. He's going trying to get help, and the military's of no help. They're just pushing opiates at him, going, take opiates. And all this lead to, well, every other movie you've ever seen about drugs. Yeah. You know, yeah, couple wants drugs, starts making deals with the wrong people, start finding alternate ways of being able to pay for drugs, ends up with them robbing banks, everything goes totally downhill, yada yada. That's Cherry. And honestly, I guess the only real surprises here are just that it does have this weird sense of humor that is so out of place. Like, there's things like they're going to a bank and the bank, instead of called Citibank, is called Shitty Bank, and there's like the loan officer is called Mr. Whoever, you know, and stuff like that. And you're like, why?
It has this weird, like, Fight Club style of humor, like, just so briefly throughout the entire movie that I almost didn't even catch it. I was like, what? It's not strong enough to be a part of the movie. It just kind of sits there. Brad actually texted me when he was watching this. He was like, so this is like a comedy, right? Like, this is supposed to be silly and funny. And I was like, no.
It works if the first bank he robs is Shitty Bank, and the second bank is Fuck You Bank, and the third bank, if that would have been called, I don't know, Our Pun Guy Went Home Early, then it works as a comedy. But I'm not sure what that was trying to say. We all inherently are an audience that hates the bank. They don't have to shove that in our face, right?
And also, like I said, this is a super dark fucking story. What made them think that kind of humor fit in it? I mean, Goodfellas has a lot of humor in it because it is, despite the fact ultimately it's a tragedy, it's kind of a party movie at the same time. It's like big and brash, and it's almost a celebration of violence at points. And it's like, you know, a rise and fall of a kingpin story. There's stuff you can put funny in that. This is a tragic story of an innocent kid whose whole life gets totally fucked. And I had a hard time. There was a point I was like, this is just fucking abrasive, man. What are you doing? Lots of swirling helicopter shots and crazy screen transfers. And I, as it went on, at first I'm like, oh, this is going to be a really dynamic film. Cool. I'm excited. And then after a while, I was like, wow, what are you doing?
Why is it taking so long to get there?
Oh man. 2 hours and 21 minutes. Jesus. I mean, for a story that can only end one way, and in fact, they show us in the first 2 minutes of the film how it ends.
Poorly.
Yeah.
Well, that's also...
Ta-da, done. Go home.
Yeah, like, it has the start of that. I bet you're wondering how I got here. And already, since I saw where it was going, when a man with opioid worms under his neck is... trying to rob a bank. No, I got it. I know how you got here. You joined the military, and after your service, the government was like, we don't care about you anymore. Bye-bye. And then poor Tom Holland's like, well, you got 2 hours and 10 minutes, buddy, so good luck.
Yeah, it's not for lack of trying on Holland's part. He really does throw himself into the part.
Yeah. But
sometimes somebody is just the wrong actor for a role, no matter how good they might be or what they prepare for it. And I think this is the best, the biggest example I can think of, like maybe ever I've seen, where you're like, what? You can't stop thinking about it.
It's almost cute because he is trying so hard.
Yeah.
He wants so badly to be like, I'm never going to stop being Spider-Man because I'm never going to let go of that part of me and that piece of my heart. But also I'd like to be taken seriously as an actor and do other types of things. We're like, well, you're like 24. Give it some time, buddy.
Yeah.
His narration doesn't sound hopeless enough either. It sounds kind of, I am reading a script. And I know narrating is a different beast than actually performing with your face, body, voice.
I mean, it's a performance, but, you know.
So it was, I don't know, he'd be like, oh, the trees were so beautiful. They made me cry sometimes. Anyways, page two. Like, and I read the novel. Of course I did. And all the dialogue is pulled directly from it, but sometimes they have characters say his thoughts. Like he would be thinking, yeah, that was Emily. She loved weak men. And for some reason, the Russos have her saying, I like weak men. And I'm thinking, is this a joke? I kind of believe she would talk like that, like we said earlier, because she's pretty freaking awesome in this role. But why would anybody want to be around someone who said that? Because
Yeah, I agree. I remember that moment going, what? Who says that? There's a lot of moments like that. And, you know, the Russo brothers didn't write this. It was Angela Russo Ottstadt, who I guess is either related to or married to one of them, and Jessica Goldberg, but who wrote The Path and created that show The Path on Hulu.
Yeah, I remember
but
that.
Yeah, there's a lot of moments you're like, yeah, that just doesn't translate like that. And I gotta admit, I was almost annoyed, and partially because I just finished watching Wayne not that long ago, and I really just totally fell for Ciara Bravo as an actress. I'm like, you're amazing. I can't wait to see what you do next. And she's so great in this and so powerful at first, and then she just kind of becomes a prop.
She is probably the best performance in the movie, though.
Oh, yeah. No, agree with that. I also kind of liked Jack Rayner, who was playing a very Jack Rayner type role. I always go, it's Chris Pratt from an alternate universe. That's
what he looks like. And since they don't have their own names, his name was
Pills and Coke.
Pills and Coke. I kept referring to him as Midsummer Bear because that's a fun movie.
I like him in it, and he's playing their you know, direct drug dealer, but the guy who's like only slightly higher on the totem pole than they are, so he's not the threatening drug dealer
guy. Yeah.
As we talk about this, it seems like everyone had confidence in their role except Tom Holland, and that doesn't sound right, me saying that out loud, right? Because Tom Holland's amazing, but Drugs and Pills looked and acted like a fucking drug dealer on top of the world. Emily acted like a stressed out all the time nursing school junkie perfectly. Yeah. And Tom was just like, I'm in the movie too. Gotta go rob a bank. Hope Mr. Stark's not mad about it. You know, it's.
I know I kept mentioning the Goodfellas thing earlier. You can't miss it. And you're right, Davey, Fight Club is an equal influence as well. But man, this is like just nods of the hat to mafia films throughout this fucking thing for no reason at all. There's like a whole weird thing where like, yeah, I got assigned to like, you know, just keep an eye on this one dude who was an old mobster who's in this thing. And there's this whole sequence of like, yeah, he's like, he just tells a bunch of lies and he's kind of a dick, but he's like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. And it has nothing to do with anything. It's just like a sequence there, a little cut to add color, I guess. But the movie's 2 hours and 20 minutes. What did you need that there for? And like James Gandolfini's son, Michael Gandolfini, has a role in here. It's like, oh, tip of the hat to The Sopranos, having him in there. Like, I don't know, man. I just, there's a point I just kind of, I was with you, movie. I'm rooting for everyone involved. I at first you're like, oh, I like the style, even if it is very reminiscent of other people. But there's a point I just kind of gave up on it and shrugged. I was like, come on, guys, you got to be a little more original than this.
I kind of wish we didn't know where it was going. I don't know why they opened up with that.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. It was a bad because they saw it in other movies.
Yeah.
That's so much in this movie is like, that's the answer, because they saw it in another movie they liked. Like that, you met, like, it's like just Chris Farley's characters that are like, hey, remember that time when you did that? That was awesome.
And because it's so serious, and it's not serious like Goodfellas is, where it's like, oh, that's a tragedy. Like, this is real life bleak shit. Like, this is awful. This is not the place to do all your wacky, like, fourth wall breaks and little, like, stylistic things. Like, you can do that. But you have to be a much better filmmaker than basically anyone has ever been to pull that, like, tonal balance off. Like, it's so bleak and it's so real. And it tries to throw in all these weird little mafia jokes and, like, stylistic things. It's like, what the fuck is happening? This what is a movie, real story.
Yeah, what yeah. movie were you trying to make here? Was this at one point based on a completely different novel and you just went, well, I still like those parts, though. At least keep those in. I'm like, go watch. There are films that are about really bleak drug stuff that have funny moments in them. Watch Sid and Nancy by Alex Cox, or Drugstore Cowboy by famous director whose name I'm blanking on right now. And those movies do
I love his work.
Really, oh, he's the best, Mr. Whoever. Yeah.
God, I can't remember. Well, this kind of steals from Sid and Nancy, except someone was like, kind of a downer ending, though, don't you think? And
to have the two of them making out in a alleyway while garbage falls around them. There you go. Let's go to final thoughts. Davey, get us started.
Yeah, this movie's really not good. I am slowly starting to think that the Russos are just really good at being a part of a bigger thing, because I love their work on Community, and I like some and love some of their Marvel films. And I can't really attribute any of that to them as filmmakers, especially after seeing this. This movie is ambitious, and it tries a lot of things, and Tom Holland, God, he wants, like, an Independent Spirit Award nomination more than I've ever wanted anything in my life, and I respect that. But it doesn't click. This whole movie is kind of a weird tonal bowl of ideas, and it's so long, and it's so disingenuous. I would forgive a lot if there was a part of this movie that made me feel like, oh, like, that's why you told it this way. Like, that's why you did this, because, like, it spoke to you in this way. I forgive a lot of that. This movie doesn't have that. This feels like two people saying, well, we made the biggest movie ever made, but now we're going to make a grown-up film. And it's like, you made a movie where a third of it was just famous people being sad. That's my shit. Just keep doing that. You're good at that. And there's a lot of value and power in that. You don't need to have Tom Holland saying, oh, fucking, to make it a legitimate film.
That's the script.
That's the sound of a baby doing heroin, for the record. That was that sound effect. This is a misfire in almost every single way. I'm going to give this 3 out of 10... mysterious meetings with super duper scary and dangerous mafia people.
Brad?
Yes. It seems this character Cherry is kind of a mashup between Holden Caulfield and Evan Hansen. If he was sandpapered down to being smooth and almost blameless, where the novel in this man's memoir, not memoir, succeeds, because he's said, no, not a true story. But like you pointed out, Chris, isn't it though? Everything I'm reading about you from other people matches up with this memoir. That's a whole other issue, I'm sure, legalities of military and stuff. But he's a harsh, angry, bored man who almost is watching himself outside of his own body, which really relates to, as you both pointed out, PTSD. And I think Tom Holland does a good job when he has the shakes and the nightmares and the horror of waking up alone and not even realizing that you're supposed to be safe in your home. And that's what the novel is so good at, pointing out the absurdity that all these men who gave up everything, and women that literally made a choice to give up everything about their humanity for the freedom promise. and they get treated like trash in ways that we don't even comprehend. But Tom Holland is just given a needle and be like, get the shakes. Now the audience will be sad about it because being a junkie is sad. Can we please explore this? Like, can we explore how this young couple never had a chance to have a real love story because of this shit that happened to them? Anyways.
Not to go off on a rant here, but I will because I'm Brad.
10 minutes later, we're both crying.
Jesus, man.
It was just like, ooh, razzle dazzle flashy. It's called Shitty Bank. Get it? And I'm like, oh my God, he was forced into robbing banks out of fear of dying alone, afraid, with a needle in his arm in an alley? That's fucked up. And the Russos are like, no, but it says banks are mean. Do you get it? So I'm going to give this, and I am glad it's out, because I hope more people either seek out memoirs or the many memoirs that veterans have written to shine a light on these problems. The opioid crisis should have been handled longer than how do we get into an ATM machine. I'm going to give this 6 out of 10 good old-fashioned truck anchor drags.
You know, I was struck when you were talking, Davey, about just them working, the Russo brothers, in these other groups that are much more of a, you know, something that was there before they got there, that had structure, that have really smart people who know what they're doing above them, that are guiding them, saying, okay, the guidelines are there. We're here to help. It's like, have you ever worked a job with a really great assistant manager where you're like, that guy, I love that guy. He's great doing his job every night. He keeps the restaurant running smooth or whatever it is, you know. He's like, he does a good job. But that guy wants to be a general manager, right? And most of the time, in my experience, when that guy turns into a general manager, he spends 2 or 3 years fucking up shit bad. Because now that he's in charge and has no one to answer to, he's had all these ideas he's been formulating for so long, keeping to himself. And he goes, ha-ha! And like, well, that shit don't work. And if they did, the guys who were already there would have tried that already. And this kind of feels like that, where you're like, in fact, all the movies these guys have produced even are like, they're tonally, something is off with all of them. You're like, you don't quite... It feels like you're not quite ready to graduate to being the guys in charge yet. You're great assistant managers. You're great at being at that level. Marvel movies are certainly one example where there's no question it's the producer, Kevin Feige, who's the guy in charge, you know, among other people. I don't know. You know, this is an expensive film, clearly. I mean, at least it looks that way. It's $30 to $40 million. Like, it looks a lot more expensive than $30 to $40 million, certainly. And I think maybe that's one thing they were really impressed with like, their vision for this, because it is so really constantly moving. I mean, it's vibrant, certainly. It just maybe shouldn't be, at least not with this particular story. I don't know. Other people have pulled it off doing that, but these guys just didn't know how to. It doesn't work. Tom Holland is badly miscast, as I said. I don't know. I just, there's a point by the end of this, I was begging for this to be over. I was like, oh man, it's almost over, right? Shit, there's an hour left. Fuck. Yeah. And Cherry's like, we were calling him like Tom Holland's name is Cherry. It's not, it's like totally random thing, like, oh, you busted your cherry.
Okay.
At one scene. And that's it, I guess. That's why they call the movie Cherry.
It's what happens when you don't have a name for your movie and you have 3 minutes before shooting. And it's like, they say that at one point, make that a chapter title because this movie has chapters because fuck you. And it's also the name of the movie. We did it.
We did it. Yeah, I'm going to give this 3.5 out of 10. Babies crawling on the ceiling in much better tragic comedy drug stories. See, drugs, Trainspotting, great example of someone taking a really tragic, super dark drug story and finding a way to organically inject humor and style into it. That movie is a classic, and it works. It's worthy of study. I don't feel like they learned anything from that movie watching Cherry.
Yeah, the imagery was fantastic, too. Can we talk about that for a couple hours?
Yeah, I mean, just going to review Trainspotting now.
The root cause of a lot of his problems were he was bored. How amazing is that? We all want these tragic at a graveside. No, father, why couldn't I have been there? When Ewan McGregor's just fucking bored.
I just asked, have you got him in your sights, Miss Moneypenny?